everybody, to Turing's Distinguished Leader Series. We have a very exciting guest here, Chase Warrington, Head of Remote at Doist. Doist makes the super popular Todoist app. Like it's one of my favorite to-do apps. I have the app on my iPhone, and it's exciting to have one of the early pioneers of remote work and distributed teams with us today. The Turing Distinguished Leader Series is a podcast series by Turing. I'm Jonathan Siddharth, CEO and co-founder of Turing. Turing offers the world's most deeply vetted developers and teams matched by AI. We believe traditional recruiting as we know it is over. Traditional recruiting was never built for a software-first world. If you look at traditional recruiting, whether it's recruiting firms, staffing firms, labor marketplaces, or IT services companies, they suffer from three fatal flaws. First, they're super slow to find the right engineers or build the right engineering teams because they tap into a very limited talent pool. There is very shallow vetting. So to find one engineer, you might have to interview 20 people or 30 people. And there is no control on quality of the work. So we asked ourselves, what if we could build a software-first talent cloud to solve this problem? What if you could push a button to spin up your engineering team as easily as you'd spin up servers on AWS? What if you had an AI-powered vetting and matching engine under the hood? And what if you had automated controls for productivity, security, and compliance? This is why we built Turing. It's the world's most deeply vetted developers and teams matched by AI. The traditional recruiting, as we know it, is over. The future is the talent cloud. Turing has more than 400 wonderful companies building on top of the talent cloud. These include companies like Johnson & Johnson, Volvo, Reddit, Disney, and many, many more. It's exciting for us to do this series to spread the best practices around managing distributed teams in the cloud. And I'd like to welcome Chase to this podcast. Chase, you're head of remote at Doist, one of the early pioneers of remote work and distributed teams. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? What does a head of remote do and Doist?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you, Jonathan. Great to be here. And I'm big fan from the outside looking in. So it's exciting for me to have a chat with you about this. I think we're both very passionate, not just about remote work, but about the future of work in a broader sense. And you guys are tackling that in a from a different angle than we are, but in, you know, in the same world. And I find that really fascinating. So definitely looking forward to this. Doist is a software company. You mentioned we're most well known for the to-do list app called Todoist, which is often ranked as the number one productivity app in the world. And that product is built by a team of about 100 full-time employees in 35 different countries. So very, very distributed. And we've been working that way since our existence began about 15 years ago. So when you say early pioneer, I guess that is fitting because it was long before the pandemic forced a lot of teams into remote. And so on the surface, you know, we may not appear like a standard or typical advocate for remote work. We make a productivity app and a to-do list app. And what does that have to do with the future of work? But the way in which we work has really been our superpower. We're hyper asynchronous. We're very much so remote first. We have no offices, no locations. We don't hire based on location. We don't expect people to be working at any given time. It really is a very async, remote first type of environment. And so on top of that, we've ended up building another app called Twist, which is our communication tool. It's a communication tool built kind of for us, by us, sort of thing, it's built to empower remote teams that want to go all in on asynchronous communication. So that's who we are. And my role as head of remote is really to make sure that the remote infrastructure of the team is operating at the highest possible efficiency that we possibly can. So I'm looking outwards, looking at a lot of companies and other future of work leaders, trying to learn what other companies are doing. I mean, it's a wild world out there right now. There's tons of new products and best practices and all kinds of ideas being shared about how to do remote work at a really high level. And we've been doing it for a long time, but we, you know, we see room for improvement. And so it's my job to make sure that we're staying on the cutting edge.
That's great. Thank you, Chase. And I heard you describe Doist as a hyper async culture. I've never heard the term hyper async.
I'm going to coin it.
That's wonderful. And Twist also seems to be a tool to turbocharge async communication. So we hear a lot about how important async communication is for distributed teams. We hear that from the GitLab folks. Darren Murph, who's an advisor to us at Turing, also speaks a lot about it. I'm curious, like, what's your take on async work? How can companies become excellent at being hyper async?
Yeah, Darren and GitLab are a great example of another company built predominantly on asynchronous communication. And for clarification, in case it's a big nerdy remote work world. So in case anybody's wondering what it means, essentially we just mean that we're building our communication stack based on non-immediate responses. So everything is a very documentation-based environment. It's a very non-meeting based environment. It's almost as much what we don't do as what we do. And so we don't rely on meetings. In fact, we just ran a survey internally, and 65% of our company is averaging less than 2 hours per week of meetings, and 100% report averaging less than 8 hours per week of meetings. So the industry standard is somewhere around 18 hours. We've all heard tons of horror stories about teams just, you know, being locked into Zoom meetings all day, and how unproductive that is, what a waste of time it is. And so async culture is really built on documentation, really powerful written word, non-immediate responses, which allows people to get into a deep work flow state. They're not sitting at their desk waiting to get pulled into a conversation, having expected to be responding immediately, or tapped into a meeting, a virtual meeting at any given time. It's really about deep work, disconnecting from your chat tool. We actually say, like, if you're chatting, you're not working. So when I see someone immediately responding, my instinct is more like, well, why weren't you really working? And so we have that mindset. And I think that there's a lot of spin-offs and positives to that way. Everything's a choice, right? And like there's certainly some downsides to async. The number one being that it moves a little bit slower than, especially in a vacuum, when you hone in on one individual task or project. The way we work is very cross-functional and multi-project focused. So we're working on a handful of things at any given time and trying to move them all forward in incremental steps. And this is all powered by async. And so the one last point I'll make on it is, it's a little bit by necessity. When you think about the fact that we have 100 people in 35 countries, that spans all time zones too, by the way. It's not like we're in 35 European countries overlapping with each other. We're in every time zone. So we almost have to work that way. We can't expect people to be on call at midnight their time so that they can be on a meeting. So it was built that way out of necessity. And then we fine-tuned it to kind of make it our superpower.
That's great. And how does Twist help with async communication?
So Twist was designed with async in mind from the very beginning. You can kind of think about it we were a team built on Slack, by the way. So we were using Slack for a long time, like many tech companies, and we just felt a lot of pain, which are in turn we hear from our customers now that like almost all of our customers come from a Slack environment that felt like, or Teams or something like that, where they felt like there's a little bit too much happening here. It's a little too active. It promotes instant, one line at a time thinking, and instant gratification. And what we wanted was something that was very asynchronous. Again, it's almost more about what it doesn't have than what it does have, but there's no presence indicators. There's no red receipts. There's no expectation that you're getting a lot of notifications. Notifications are kind of minimal and turned off by default. So the whole idea is, again, like getting back to the idea of you don't need to be in your chat tool to get real work done.
Yeah.
And it's centered around the threaded conversation. So it's more long form than it is like quick back and forth chatting.
That's super insightful, Chase. I feel the same way. Like, I feel like with messaging, it's very it interrupts quite a bit. And we are in the process of like defining some norms around when to use Slack, when to use email, and when to text, right? Like I loosely operate with the sense, like at least with my directs, on if it's something hyper urgent to text, if it's something mm-hmm. that needs a response during the day to message, but for everything else to use email. Like email just helps you, at least for me, like I find it a way to give more thoughtful responses to queries, and doesn't feel like this person is waiting to hear from you immediately.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what we had in mind. Like when it's funny going back to it, we built Twist again, like before the pandemic. We had this vision that it was, you know, Slack was too chatty for us and too synchronous. And at the same time, email was not quite transparent enough. I think the problem, if I was being harsh or critical of that mindset, the problem would be that those conversations end up getting trapped in silos that in your email inbox. And so that information is not transparently available to the rest of your team the way it would be in Slack or Twist or something like that. So building this hyper asynchronous culture where we want everything to be transparent and documented and available for all to see at any given time and to have a track record of everything, we felt like we needed a central place for all those conversations to be. So we actually don't email internally at all. And we have Telegram set up for like emergencies, if there's something, you know, when the app crashes or something. But otherwise 99% of our communication takes place in Twist. And the other thing I'll say is we've invested a lot in a handbook for long-term policies and things like that. We do have a separate handbook that we use that's updated constantly as well. So those two tools are where almost all of our communication takes place.
That's great. That's great. Is your handbook public?
Not yet, but I'm actually leading an initiative next quarter. I hope to work in that direction. And actually, we're going to revamp the whole experience. It's something we're kind of doubling down on as we speak.
That's great. But when you do that, please share that with us. We'd love to share this with many of our Turing customers. A lot of our Turing customers are companies that are either distributed or hybrid, and many of them are hybrid, with a portion of their workforce being globally distributed. And they would all benefit from best practices around async work. One question, Chase, that I hear from a lot of CEOs is how do you solve for connection in a globally distributed team? I feel like we have okay tools for collaboration. Like I say okay in that Zoom and Slack are not perfect, but they take us some step of the way. I would say Zoom, Slack, and G Suite take us some step of the way. But in terms of connection, like making sure people form the right relationships with each other, they make friends at work, they feel they build trust and good relationships. We hear a lot about offsites, but offsites get super complicated when, particularly like with Duist, I imagine when you have people from 35 countries. What's your advice for companies on how to do offsites really well? And more generally, how to solve for connection in a distributed team?
This is one of my favorite subjects to talk about, because I think, you know, for those of us that are really passionate about making this whole future of work, remote work thing work, you have to solve for this, because this is the low-hanging fruit that any detractor of this type of work would take a shot at right away. And a lot of us have heard plenty of that from, you know, from CEOs and leaders around the world who suddenly care a lot about culture, which is one thing that's kind of interesting. But they'll take that shot and say, you know, how do you build culture in a distributed environment? People are going to be lonely sitting in their bedrooms in their underwear, you know, doing work, living miserable lives, and that's no way to live. And there's a lot of points to make on this. So one is that I think in a very general sense, that can be true. And it's okay to acknowledge that. Like the worst form of remote work, which I've witnessed very closely. Actually, I've mentioned this before, but like my mom was the first remote worker that I ever knew. And this was like 20 something years ago. ahead of her time, for sure. She managed to convert her nursing career into an online nursing career. But it was a miserable experience. It was very toxic. It was very lonely. There was no culture. There was no intentionality put behind creating a great experience. She was ostracized as an outsider compared to the people in the office. And her mouse clicks were tracked and things like this. So the worst experience within the remote work stratosphere is horrible. And it's okay to acknowledge that is the case. And it's particularly the case when it comes to culture and connection. What is also true, though, is that there are many companies out there, and I'd like to think Duist is one of them, that are succeeding at a really high level where you have incredible relationships being built, a lot of investment in social capital, activities being planned both around work and social life, in person, virtual, and synchronous and asynchronous, a lot of different ways to build connection. It takes a very intentional approach. You cannot leave it to happenstance. You don't just flip Zoom on and open a Slack account and create culture. It takes effort. And it's one of the main challenges that I'm really excited to take on at Duist. And one of the top priorities that I have is to see that we double down on that. So there's a lot of different things we can do. In fact, I wrote an article recently, which maybe we can link to, that lists out literally every single thing that we do in this regard. And I mentioned those three kind of buckets that they're in. It's synchronous and in-person activities. So we do offsites and retreats and mentorship trips and things like that. So this is all revolved around the idea of remote first doesn't mean remote only. So we do actually bring people together a couple times a year. Then we have synchronous virtual activities for anything from knowledge sharing activities and cooking classes together and games being played and things like that. And then we have asynchronous activities happening as well. Chat spaces where people are talking about things outside of work and things along those lines. The point there, though, is that it takes a multi-pronged approach, you have to put a lot of intentionality behind it. And so we can go deeper into any of those if you want, but that's kind of like a high level overview. And that article will share in depth each one of those activities and how we carry them out.
That's great, Chase. Please share that article. We'll include it in our show notes, in our YouTube videos, and in our podcast. That's great. I loved your statement about remote first does not mean remote only. Mm-hmm. And this is like one of my pet peeves. Like when people talk about remote work, there's almost this implicit notion that you don't meet.
Yeah.
which is ridiculous. Like, of course you meet, you have to meet, you have to bring people together virtually, physically. It's just the default. Should the default be commuting for an hour every day, stuck in traffic and reaching work kind of super drained and de-energized, and leaving work and reaching home super de-energized? Or do you want to work from home and meet as needed, right? Like, and with intentionality. So I loved the remote first does not mean remote only.
I think about it like flipping that paradigm upside down. Like, instead of being forced to hang out 95% of the time and then, 5% of the time having my free time, we've just flipped it upside down, and we get together about 5 to 10% of the year. And and that works great for us. I mean, we leave those physical spaces where we've come together for a week and gotten some awesome work done, moved some things forward, connected around things, both around work and outside of work, and usually in amazing places that are actually exciting, not like a cubicle or a conference room that nobody's excited to be in every day. Yeah. And we leave fulfilled and connected, and those carry us through to the next set of activities together. And in the meantime, we're all getting to build our perfect work day and life around our work. We have people who are, primary caregivers, and people who have aging parents, and people who have weird sleep schedules, and like they just wouldn't fit into the common 9 to 5 plus commute every single day. And so they're getting to live their best life and work on stuff that they're passionate about from wherever they want in the world. And I think that's one of the things that's really exciting, is like this mindset around remote work is one thing, but then there's elements like embracing like asynchronous communication actually like enables you to focus on the nonlinear workday and allowing people to craft their perfect workday. And so this is kind of like that next level of remote work and getting out of the proverbial like miserable in my bedroom in my underwear, lonely thing. So, I think it's really exciting.
That's great. Chase, like, I'd love to go one level deeper in your article in terms of some of the ideas that you have specifically around offsites and bringing people together. But before we do that, what is culture to you?
Yeah, culture for me is a shared set of values and beliefs that the team feels united around. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's two offshoots of that. There's one in the working world, around what we're doing in terms of what we're working on every day. And I think that's the most important one. We've always held strong to the notion that we're a team, not a family kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to unite and bond around our work. So everything is for, like, that's the main course of how we work and how we build culture. And then we sprinkle in the social activities to fill in the gaps, I guess. And I think one misconception that a lot of people might think of when they think of culture, and particularly maybe when we're talking about building culture on a remote team, is they think of, like, you know, Zoom happy hours and arcade games that you play online to build culture. And that's not how our culture is built. Our culture is built when we hire people and when we put them in really interesting, difficult, challenging projects that they're excited to work on and move things forward, and we celebrate those. And then we also get on, you know, a platform and have a gaming session or cook a meal together with one of our coworkers from Pakistan or something like that, you know. So we have this, like, this right mix of the two to help us build culture.
That's great. I love your definition. It is a shared set of values and beliefs that the company unites around. And I also like your clear articulation for Duos that you're a team, not a family, which is, again, a very clarifying thing to point out for the people who buy into this culture. And there could be other companies that subscribe to the "we are a family" sort of shared set of values, and they're both distinct. And it's good to be clear on what you're building.
I think that clarity, just one thing to add, is so, like, even more important. Somebody will say that's important in every company, and that's fair. But like, having very clear mission statement, core values, and connecting your culture to those things, I believe personally, becomes a little bit more important, like mission critical, in a distributed environment. When you don't have the four walls of the office and the physical space that you go into, and the natural serendipitous conversation and culture that just kind of ignites inside those four walls, when you remove that, you have to be very strong in some other ways. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about our mission statement, our core values, and what we're, and not just serving them as lip service, but, like, what are we doing to actually serve those?
Yeah.
And circling it back to the offsites, actually, like, that's what we really use the offsites to do. So that, just for, like, some context, like, that is, it's kind of weird because my title is head of remote, but one of the main things that I'm responsible for is the only non-remote aspect of our infrastructure, which is also our offsites. And the reasoning behind that is we feel they're so vital to making distributed work at a sustainable level. So I oversee our offsites. We do two offsites a year. One is company-wide. It's called Duos Connect. And then we have another one about 6 months later, which is the individual teams getting together. So the Android team and the marketing team, and they all go to their separate cities and have a week together. So we use those, not so much like it's very critical not to use that time. It's a poor use of the resources to use that time to just do normal work. You know, you don't want to, like, get together and just go sit in a co-working and all type away on your keyboards. You could have done that from home. So we use this time for the types of things that we can't do so well from a distance. The main bit of that is building that social capital, those connections and culture, and filling in those gaps there. So we spend a predominant amount of that time, which is pretty significant. Like, if you think about it, these are heavy investments and a lot of different types of resources. And we spend most of that time just kind of hanging out together in a structured setting. We do get some work done, and that work is generally very connected to our core values and mission statement. A good example of this is, like, we hosted a hackathon. It was a 3-hour hackathon with all members of the team from all elements, all focused on connecting a project to our mission statement. And so we're doing activities like that to like reinforce these things that we talk about all year, which are core values, mission statement, things like that. So, the last offsite we rented a small village in the Austrian Alps and brought everybody in from 35 countries and, had a blast. It was amazing.
That's wonderful. That's great. So you do it twice a year, and it sounds, and this is 100 people from 35 countries. Out of curiosity, the last year, or the year before, which city did you fly all 100 into?
One of the reasons
we picked that city.
Yeah, I mean, especially with we were still not out of, I don't know if we're still out of COVID now yet or anything, but we definitely were on the back end of it, but not out of the darkness yet. Yeah. When we brought people together, so there was a lot of stipulations with people coming from certain countries and having certain vaccines and what countries they could enter and not enter. And so we flew almost everybody. One of the reasons we chose Austria is it borders multiple countries, and so we could actually get people into, you could fly into Austria or northern Italy like Milan, or you could fly into Munich or Frankfurt or Zurich or Vienna. So you had lots of major airports you could fly into. And so we brought people in to multiple airports, got them to this little village in the Alps via multiple methods of transportation. But the majority of them flew into Munich.
Got it. Interesting. And what would some of the agenda items or themes look like in this week when you're together, when you're planning the offsite? I love that you said it's not a time for people to come and just do work that they could anyway have done without meeting people in person.
Yeah.
You mentioned structured hanging out. I'm kind of curious, what have you found to work well that would be like good advice for people looking to do this for their own companies?
Yeah. So I think there's like some guiding principles that we try to infuse into the whole thing, and I'll just run through some of them. So one of them is optional by default. So attending the retreat in general is totally optional. It's not a problem if it's just not your thing. But then when you get there, also almost every single activity is also optional. We want people to show up energized. We found, especially something for anybody kind of diving into these waters, is especially after COVID, people's social muscles are weakened, and they don't have the same stamina that they used to, even for the most extroverted of us. And so, we found a lot of people needing to take time just to, suddenly being inundated with 100 people, constant interaction, lots of activities on the agenda. It can be a very overwhelming. So we'd make everything optional by default. You show up or you don't. We provide lots of options as well. Sort of the structure of the day would be, we'd have a couple hours of work in the morning, and then in the afternoon, several options to choose from that sort of fell into multiple categories. Like one would be very kind of active, like, okay, we're going to go on a hike. Another one might be very relaxing, we're going to go to a spa. And the other one might be sort of cerebral, we're going to go to a museum, for example. And so everybody could kind of break off and go do things that they were genuinely interested in. And what that does by intentionally is it breaks the bigger group down into smaller groups. It's very hard and overwhelming to connect with 100 people in one setting. So we do it. We put a lot of emphasis on breaking it down into smaller groups so people can have real conversations, connect with people around things that they're excited about. If I choose to go on the hike, I probably have an interest in hiking, and I'm hiking with other people who also have an interest in hiking. Same if I go to the museum. We did the same with the hackathon, for example. We broke the larger group down into lots of little teams and had them focusing on what they could, building something that they were all really passionate about. So this gives people an opportunity to connect around work and social things. And I think one of the other major elements is that you want to have, I mentioned unstructured free time, but taking that like a little bit further, you want to make sure that there's free time on the agenda. It should not be every minute accounted for. First of all, things are going to go over. They're going to go beyond your expectations. But secondly, you want to have time for people to just be people. They don't get this opportunity very often. So let's let people just be humans and hang out and make decisions. We had one situation where a group of back-end developers during this three-hour block, they ended up going to a hotel room and building something. They coded something and they had a blast doing it. And like they came to dinner that night, like, look what we built. And these guys never really got a chance to work together in real life. And they had an awesome time. another group went swimming in the lake. And, you know, so it's important to build that time in.
That's great. That's great. Is there any particular agenda item that kind of you found to work really well that you kind of keep repeating at multiple offsites? Like any, or is it every offsite is kind of bespoke in terms of the themes and sessions that you have? Is there like one particular session that you kind of have happen at every one of these company offsites?
There's a few kind of like rituals I feel like that we'll always carry forward. One is like a no holds bar AMA with our CEO, not to put you on the spot, Jonathan. we basically like an open forum, you know, just drill me with whatever you want. And that's accompanied by like kind of a state of the company, state of the macroeconomic situation from the CEO. But I mean, it really is, you know, it can get a little hairy in there, but it's encouraged. And so we'll probably always do that. We also do like a round of workshops. We have Doisters lead a round of workshops. So we have one half day set up to where people have volunteered to, and we scope these out very detailed. I mean, we want to make sure they're done really well, but people volunteer or raise questions or concerns or ideas ahead of time. And then we create a dedicated space for roundtable discussions on certain things related to the company. And we find those very helpful. The key with those is if they're not very well prepared, they're not very impactful. That's one of those things you could do better asynchronously or virtually. And so it's not really worth it unless you're going to confine those to very short time periods where that time is very well prepared ahead of time. Mm-hmm. The other one is, I mentioned the hackathon a couple times now. We call that Doist Build. And Doist Build will carry forward. It was above and beyond the highlight of the last one, at least in terms of, you know, the work sessions and things like that. It was the first time that we did it, and the company loved it, and we're gonna even go further with it next time.
That's great. That's great. Do you have a blog post on offsites in particular?
I do. Yeah, I've written a couple, which will expand upon some of the ideas that we've discussed here, both kind of about like pre-planning and some of the things that you want to take care of, some of the edge cases, like I haven't mentioned, like how do you take care of your sales team during the offsite, right? And how do you take care of people with mobility issues, and how do you, you know, some of the mechanics and the edge cases, and then another one more about like the concepts of, you know, what goes into the strategy of creating an offsite. We call it an IRL strategy, and so yeah, I'd be glad to share both of those.
That's great. That's great. I love that we've shifted from what's your remote work strategy to what's your IRL strategy.
Right. That's... Again, yeah. Kind of weird that it falls into my domain. But I kind of love that it does too, because I think this humanizing of remote work is what can really carry it forward into the mainstream, actually. Like we have the tools and the processes and a lot of things to make it work, even if it's a bit clunky sometimes. But we're social beings and we'll always crave that. And that'll eventually eat away at the infrastructure that we built up around remote work if we don't solve that.
That's great. That's great. And do share your blog posts on this, Chase. We'd love to include that in the show notes as well, in terms of good best practices for planning offsites. What should a good IRL strategy be for a remote first company?
I hear a lot of companies, you know, everybody's got their own mix. We've really settled in hard on the two offsites per year. We also have a few perks in, like to help subsidize costs if you want to go meet up with another teammate. So we do have the people that really crave more connection. They might get a third one in every year. But two is the right number for us, in terms of like frequency and cadence. They're separated by about 6 months. And I generally say you want to start planning no later than 6 months out in front of those. Some of the like guiding principles, I think, are just that you want to make sure that they're optional by default. You want to make sure they're very inclusive, go over and above on inclusivity. When you're bringing people in from X number of countries, there's going to be challenges with visas. During COVID times, there might be challenges with vaccines and who can come and go to different places, and not just getting into a country, but also returning back to their home country. And you want to make sure you take care of all the edge cases. Like there's a fixing the IRL strategy for 80 to 90% of the companies fairly easily, but you have a lot of people. You're going to have, how do you solve the hybrid situation? You know, when you've got 90% of your team in one place, what do you do with the other 10% that weren't able to make it? What do you do with people with mobility issues? What do you do with people that have food allergies and or colorblind? We had an issue, something arose with colorblindness last time. So you really want to think through all this and inclusivity. You know, this is so vital in this situation, because if you're in a regular company and you go into the office every day and there's a happy hour every Friday and you miss that occasionally, like, that, it's not really that big a deal. This is your one chance per year to perhaps spend a few days with your team. And so you want to plan really far in advance. You want to make sure that everybody has a chance to be there and take care of the people that can't, and take care of your, you know, that goes for primary caregivers, people who with their children. We have some perks in place to help families during these times, so that one of the partners can leave and come to the meeting. We help fund their partner back home with some extra funds to take care of the children. So just thinking through those little details goes a really long way. And then again, the last thing is coming back to, don't use that time to do what you could be doing asynchronously and remotely. That can get very dangerous, because you can get into your day-to-day thinking, oh, we'll just wait for the offsite to tackle this. And you never want to hear that from anybody. Mm-hmm. You never want to be waiting for that IRL to actually get something done. You're built to work remotely and asynchronously. So do that every day, and then use those few days together for all the other stuff that you can't do remotely.
Mm-hmm. Great advice, Chase. And Chase, like, what are some of the craziest myths that you've heard about distributed work? Mm-hmm. And can you help us debunk them?
Yeah, sure. My favorite one is that, you know, it's a lonely environment, that you'll have no connections, you'll have no friends, you'll have no social outlets. I didn't touch on this earlier, but kind of alluded to it, I guess. We tend to fill that void with something. There's this myth floating around that, you know, if I go work for a remote company, I'll never see my coworkers, so I'll never have friends there, I'll have no social life, and I'll just be bored and lonely. What I've found is most people, that's almost never the case. People tend to fill that void with something else. They spend that extra time with their family. They spend it doing community service. They join a gym and you know, they get involved with their local church or whatever it might be. They find some way to fill that social void if they crave it. The great thing is a lot of people don't crave it. There's a huge percentage of the population that really does identify as more of an introvert and doesn't need that day in and day out interaction. And so they're actually thriving more in this environment. And so I think that's one of those myths, is that, you know, you can't have culture and connection. The other one, I think, is that remote work is inefficient because it's not quick. Because if you are working asynchronously, one of the sacrifices that you may be making is speed. But I heard someone give a great analogy once that speed is great until it's not, right? Like, you can be driving your car really fast, and there's a point at which it gets reckless. And so optimizing for speed at all costs is not really what we're going for. We should be optimizing for quality and for you know, productivity and output and things like that. So yeah, you might take a step back in terms of speed, but you'll take a step forward often in terms of quality. A great example of this is like a brainstorming session. We often do asynchronous brainstorming sessions that might last for a week, not an hour, not, you know, we're not packing into a conference room and knocking out a brainstorming session in an hour or 2 hours, but it might take 4 or 5 days. But collectively, we all probably invest about the same amount of time that we would have in that same period. And we end up getting much better results for a few reasons. One is we're not latching on to the first or the loudest idea thrown out by the alpha in the room, who everybody, there's a lot of studies that show that will generally happen. Somebody throws out an idea, everybody says, yeah, I agree. You move forward with it. And that doesn't happen in an asynchronous environment. We have a lot of time to process, to think, to speak up, to raise our voice in a different way. And usually it's after some time of thinking. I see something posted in one of these asynchronous brainstorms and I think about it. I might not respond for 24-hour days, but my response 24 hours later is 10 times better than what it would have been if I had just probably agreed off the cuff. So those are a couple of the things that I hear often that I think are worth second guessing.
Yeah. I mean, I love the point about speed. Like Turing, for example, is fully distributed. We actually find that we go much faster as a distributed team. And brainstorming is a good example, like where a fully synchronous brainstorm for all the reasons that you mentioned, like feels super inefficient to me. Like people are not very well prepared or thoughtful. And you basically get the output of a 1 hour thinking session that's, yes, dominated by maybe one or two people. And we found for brainstorms, the best way to do it is to have it be async first, where there is a document where something is written, people comment on it, thoughtfully reflect on it, and then we have a meeting. And in the meeting, like it's only about open issues that we haven't yet discussed, if there are big disagreements, big debate areas. So like for a brainstorm, I feel like a good format is always share a document ahead of time, let people react to it, comment on it, and then have the sync portion. It doesn't have to be sync only or async only, but I think that hybrid structure results in, and you get the effect of, you know, 20 hours of thinking time, somebody thinking in the showers, thinking when they're driving, like all of that. And the quality is so much better than some random sort of improv. A full sync brainstorm is really an improv, and it'll be dominated by some people who take up a lot more of the talk time, and you don't get a high quality output. And when are you going to go faster? Like when is the quality of decision going to be better? Like with something where people jam together for an hour, or thoughtfully considered something for 10 hours and then jam together for an hour to resolve, to fine tune the idea.
100% agree. It was something that I found interesting was a while back we tried at one of our offsites to kind of go do more like live brainstorming sessions. And it was really interesting to observe some of the most vocal people typically in our asynchronous environment were very quiet and didn't contribute anything. And they're some of our brightest minds. And I witnessed it live thinking we're missing out on the best of the best here by doing this in this scenario. And they just needed they were more introverted people. They were a bit more timid. They weren't going to speak up in that setting, or they needed a bit more time to formulate their ideas, you know, more perfectionists that didn't want to throw out a half-baked idea. A lot of people aren't okay with that. You know, that's the nature of a brainstorm. But a lot of people aren't okay with that. And so, you know, we're talking specifically about the brainstorm, but you can extrapolate this out across bug crushing or product development or design or whatever it might be. You know, copy creation, we get a better quality in the end using this kind of hybrid approach that you're mentioning.
Yep. And Chase, do you have any recommendations for good tools for digital whiteboarding or for facilitating brainstorms in a distributed team?
Yeah, I mean, that's the exciting thing is like this is so much better than it was just a handful of years ago. There are so many new products and platforms emerging to make distributed work much more viable these days. So if you tried this before and you couldn't do it, try it again now, because there's a plethora of options out there. Some of the go-tos I think are Mural and Miro, oddly sounding almost identical. And some people just use, like, if you're on the G Suite and you just want to use like Google, like Jamboard is also viable. You know, but I think those are a couple of the tools that I find most of the leading teams are using.
That's great. And, for a company working in as a distributed team, Chase, what are like the top two or three pitfalls that you'd suggest, so just companies think through very carefully about avoiding?
So I think the first one is so many companies are still going through this transition to some sort of distributed environment, whether it's hybrid or remote first or whatever. They're migrating from what once was an office-based world to a more distributed one. And the easy thing to do is just to copy and paste your tool set, your processes, best practices, the way you did everything before, and just throw it in a Zoom and Slack account and hope that it works out. And that it's just been seen time and time again, like that just won't work. You actually do have to really go back through and rethink every aspect of the way you work. I don't think you can be overly fine tuned or overly detailed about this process. You know, you go back and think, how do we do one-on-ones? How do we do the equivalent of, you know, hey, knock, knock, do you have 5 minutes for a quick discussion? What are the response time expectations? What tools do we use to communicate? And setting very clear guidelines around those things. So that's the first pitfall, I think, is not taking those steps to make sure that your new office space is finely tuned for the new reality. The second one, I think, is failing to put any intentionality behind the culture aspect. So we talked a lot about that already, but I firmly believe that's in that number two spot. I think that can be that can linger a little bit below the surface and end up crushing you in the end in terms of, you know, hiring, retention, and building trust and the social capital that we talked about before. So being intentional about that is completely not just like a want, but it is a need. And it's easy to overlook that during that transition, I think. Mm-hmm. You're very focused on the tools and the processes and the work, and that's understandable, but rethinking how you connect is extremely important as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could probably keep going, but those are like the top two, I think, that I see people kind of miss the mark with early on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about onboarding, Chase? Like, is there anything special that you do at Doist to make sure people, when they're onboarding to the company in their first 30 days, to make sure they have a great experience, they onboard to the culture? Any best practices or advice that you have on new team member onboarding for a distributed work context?
Yes, there's a couple things. One is to really, this goes back to that first point that I just said a minute ago, is really think through how you want your onboarding to match your work style. Mm-hmm. So for example, we previously kind of copy and pasted the traditional onboarding processes into our distributed world, and it worked, but it was subpar, like compared to our standards for other things. We revamped it completely and made it match the way that we do the way that we work, which is, again, very, very asynchronous, but with an intentional approach to synchronous work. So an example of that is, like, we had very little activity in the onboarding project, which we host in Todoist, of course. So we pass out onboarding project to our team, and we had nothing in the way of connection built into there. We had no way for them to be prompted to intentionally create connection with other teams. It was very work focused. And so we revamped that. We wanted people to have connection right away. We took that one step further and incorporated a mentorship trip. So when new hires are onboarded, they're also flown to visit their mentor and spend a week with their mentor, where they get to spend a week in some great place together, working together, having fun, things like that. So you're instantly feeling connected. You're instantly feeling supported, but you're also given this work project that is totally yours to digest on your terms. And it points you to some of the most important articles, the most important threads within Twist, some recommended reading books that we've kind of based the way that we work off of. It's a very collaborative effort. So immediately you're getting inundated in the way that we work. You're finding out that we're very asynchronous, and you're getting some intentional connection time built into that. And so, you know, being intentional around that was very important. Throwing in the human element was a huge game changer. Like, sending people to go spend some time with their mentor was really, really, really helpful for us. And I think having that, extending the onboarding process backwards into the hiring process, was also very important. So our hiring process kind of mimics that same flow as well. It's very asynchronous focused. We're, instead of starting with interviews, we're starting with test projects and asynchronous communication and making sure that looks good. And a lot of written content before you ever even get to talk to a person, because that's the way that we're going to work. So it's a natural progression from the interview process into the onboarding flow, into the working day-to-day flow. And seamlessly connecting those dots is, it takes like a very intentional approach.
That's great. That's great. This was wonderful, Chase. Thank you so much for joining us for our Turing Distinguished Leader Series and sharing your insights on building a world-class distributed team.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And where can people go to learn more from you and from Duist?
Yeah, if the asynchronous communication bit that we talked about a lot today resonates with you, we have our marketing team's built out an incredible monthly newsletter, but also a community around this newsletter with thousands of people who are really passionate about asynchronous work and making that the new norm. And so if if anything that I mentioned here resonates with you in that regard, definitely check out the Twist Async newsletter. I think we can drop that link in there, packed full of lots of information on the async front. We also have the Duist blog, blog.duist.com, which has a whole remote work and teamwork section dedicated to discussing how we make remote work work and looking outwards at some of the other leading companies in the world and how they're making remote work happen. And then I talk a lot about remote work and the future of work on LinkedIn. So I think connecting with me there is the best place to follow along some of my thoughts on the subject.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Chase. Glad we were able to have this conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.